Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Gen Z Hoops podcast. Today, I'm joined by former Liberty League Player of the Year and current power forward for Avanti Mondorf and Luxembourg, Jackson Mishanik. Jackson, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm happy to be on the podcast, and hopefully we can have a good chop up and get down to the nitty-gritties of some overseas basketball.
Yes, sir. Of course, man. Of course. So to kick off our little conversation here, can you talk a little bit about your connection to the game of basketball?
Yeah, so I think it just starts with my mom. So my mom was all-state in basketball and volleyball, but she loved basketball, and she went to Glastonbury High School, which is a relatively large public school here in Connecticut where I live. And she was a great player, and then she got me into it when I was young. So I started playing in like second, third grade. I was obviously a bigger kid. And so basketball was kind of the obvious sport to go with. And then I just played year after year, and I would end up playing up just because I was growing so quickly and I was so much bigger than a lot of the guys that I was, that were in the same grade as me in elementary school or not. And then I just developed a love for it by the time I was in seventh, eighth grade. And then every year I would just train a little more, play with a little better guys. And then it just kind of took off for me in the last couple of years, especially. But I just kind of developed that love for the game and the competitive nature of it. Started in like second grade and then up till currently.
Yeah, I totally agree. My mom actually had like a huge impact on me playing the game as well. Like at a young age, she showed me like LeBron in the Heat playing at the Garden, and I remember like LeBron going down the lane and like throwing it on like Tyson Chandler's head or something like that. I remember the exact play, and then I fell in love ever since. And of course, like I'm sure you had this too. Like you'd be walking around and like the supermarket or something like that, and like your mom would like talk to somebody and she'd be like, "Oh wow, you're a tall kid. Like, do you play basketball or something like that?" And you kind of feel like the disappointment glare if you would have said no or something like that, right?
Yeah, for sure. That was definitely a thing. I think when I was younger, it was if my mom would be talking to someone over, they'd ask how old I was. And when I was eight, I was just like the size of a kid who should have been 10, 11.
Right.
So that's what it was at first. And then once I got to be over 6 feet, really, I started getting the basketball thing. And it was just like everyone's looking at me. Wow, you're so tall. Why are you so tall? Like, do you play basketball? Okay, I go, yeah. But it's kind of funny now because people are like, wow, you're so tall. You play basketball. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty tall, but I'm the size of a wing. Like, I'm a wing, right. Fully a wing now overseas. So we can get into it more later. But I'm not even that outrageously tall for the average basketball player.
Yeah, I totally I know where you're coming from. So just going off of like a young age aspect again, what was there ever like an NBA player or anything that you kind of like really looked up to at a young age and who you wanted to play like and like be like in general?
Yeah, well, I think you mentioned the Heat and LeBron. I think there was a team, which was the 08 Celtics for me. That was when I like finally knew enough and could watch the game enough to really understand what was going on. And that team was just great with like Pierce, Ray Allen, Garnett. But when I was younger, like, it was prime Kevin Love for me. It was always who I wanted to be like, just because, I mean, he's a big white boy. I'm a big white boy. Like, he's a little taller than I am, but we both do a lot of the same things, especially now. And I just love his game. And we've kind of had a similar transition. Like, he was kind of a real beefy power player who could shoot the three a little bit. And by the end of his career, like when he really hit his prime, he was handling the ball a lot, shooting the three really well. And I feel like I've had a similar type transformation the last couple of years. So I still like want to be like prime Kevin Love to this day.
Yeah, I know we're going to get into it a little more, but like, I remember when I first like went on campus at Hobart, Jay actually told me like a story, like before like your 5 a.m. before like the early morning lifts and stuff like that, he would like check in the gym. You'd be like on the gun working on that like catch and shoot top of the key three in that like trailer spot a little bit. So like, I could testify to that. That's like what Kevin Love really gets when he's on the Heat right now. But let's get into your high school career. So you attended Kingswood Oxford School in the NEPSAC. where you were a 4-year varsity letter winner, produced over 1,000 career points and rebounds, and was a 3-time All New England honoree. So, reflecting on your time at KO and these accomplishments, what comes to mind?
Yeah, so I think I actually, a lot of people don't know this, but I started out at my local public school for my first year, my first 2 years in high school, actually. And my freshman year, I was on JV. Like, I didn't go straight to varsity. I didn't like skip all these steps. Like, I was on JV and I didn't even start. Like, I was coming off the bench on our JV team as a freshman. And then I went home that summer. And I said to my parents, like, mom and dad, I'm going to start on varsity next year. I'm going to start on varsity next year. This is my goal. It's a little outlandish, but I'm going to do it. And I would tell my friends, and the only person at school who believed that I was going to start varsity next year, it was me. Like, I probably don't even think my parents believed me. But then I was about like 6'2" my freshman year. Next year, I came back about 6'5", 6'6".
Wow.
And I had worked that summer. Like, I was lifting with the football team, which helped. And I was just, going out in the driveway and seeing how many times a day I could have roped my dad into rebounding for me. And then I came back and tryouts started. And we went through tryouts, and our varsity coach said to me, like, we're going to have you on varsity, but you're going to be on JV. Like, you're going to swing, which is a pretty common thing. As a high schooler. And then we had our first scrimmage, and one of our wings was thick. So by luck, I got to start in the scrimmage, and I ended up having a great game. I got 18 points and like 13 rebounds, and I just started the whole year, took off from there. Ended up being like all conference CCC East, which is just like the Central Connecticut Eastern Division. It's not important. And then end of my sophomore year at E.O. Smith, my mom was starting to get emails from KO, and they're saying, like, from the coaches, they're calling my mom saying, like, we'd love to have your kid come on campus. We'd love to have him here. Like, we see he's a multiple sport athlete because I played football and baseball as well. And the KO team was trying to turn their season around. They had won, I think, one game the year before, but it was the only prep school looking at me because while I had improved a lot, I was still like 6'5", 6'6", and fully like a center. Like, I wasn't shooting the ball, I wasn't handling the ball. So the coach at KO had come back. He about 10 years previously, he had left the school to go down to Florida, and he moved back. But in his previous stint as the head coach at KO, they had won the New England championships for our class. So I went on campus, I did interviews, and somehow we made the financial aid work to be able to afford going to KO. So I eventually made the executive decision with my parents that said, like, in high school, public school in Connecticut, I can be really, really good and not have to expand. Like, I can be really, really good at 6'6" and just playing center, really. But for college, like, that's not going to always cut it. Like, you can do it in college, but it's really, really hard. We went to KO, made that transition, expanded my game, and then by the time I was a senior, I had the green light to, shoot the open trail three like we talked about and put the ball on the floor. But while I was at KO, I trained all summer, every summer with the current coach at KO, Brad Seaman, who's still like basically an older brother to me now. He's younger. He was really young when he got the head coaching job at KO, which was before my senior year. And he's still on the younger side, but I still work out with him to this day. But I think he really helped me go from like, I'm really good in high school, to I'm really good in high school and I'm going to be able to be really good in college too, because there's definitely a difference. And yeah, then I just took off from there. But in terms of basketball wise, if I hadn't met Brad, the head coach at KO, I don't think I'd be where I am right now.
Yeah, totally agree. I actually went to another NEPSAC school as well. I went to Salisbury with John Mark. I'm sure you knew John Mark, of course, because you played with him last year. And I can also testify, I feel like at these prep schools, like the community aspect of it, and like you meet so many great people, and as well as basketball minds, because like they have people like tailored to like every single sport at all these schools. Like I actually met John Mark's like host dad, Mr. Ruskin. He would like work me out over the over my 3 years there, especially because I wasn't playing like my first 2 years as well. So he kind of like instilled that like kind of like motivation factor in me as well, like to keep working hard and do all like the little things on the floor to get me on the floor my senior year. And then also my senior year, I also had an assistant coach who played at UMass Lowell, and like he kind of took me under his wing. He was like, it also like worked because he was like 6 years older than me as well. So like he kind of had like that young person
Talk about
mentality.
Bryce
Yeah,
Daly.
Bryce, you know Bryce?
I played AAU with him.
Really? You played on
Yeah, we played.
City Rocks?
No, we played for Middlesex Magic together.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know Bryce? Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, he kind of like took me under his wing. I was like his like mini him in a way on campus. Like we'd carry around like the water jugs together, wear like wife beaters in the gym together, always be like lifting and like working out together like all spring. So I feel like that like those two people like really like helped propel me into like w who I am today. And yeah, I didn't play this year at Hobart, but like kind of like what they taught me, just kind of like keep the same mentality and keep like put my head down and keep working hard for like what I want. So I can also agree to that, like that there's like special people in the at these schools. So
Yeah.
going into the recruiting process for you, what was your experience like with the recruiting process, and what made you ultimately decide to come to Hobart and play for a coach staff?
Yeah. So when I was in high school, I was thinking like D1 or bust, your scholarship or bust, that Division One, Division Two, whatever. Division One or bust, Division Two or
As
bust,
many
whatever.
young people do.
As many young people do. And I think that's kind of the problem with social media now and all these offers and things that happen is that kids are thinking D1 or bust, D1 or bust all the time. And like if you get a bunch of offers and you can play D1, like obviously that's great. Your education's paid for. But I think I see every year more and more kids that play Division One at a school or at a location or just in a situation that's not great for them. And they end up in the transfer portal. Like,
Yeah,
there's so many kids in the transfer portal this year from D1. And a lot of guys that go D1 go down to D3. But, anyways, the only D1 interest I got was a little bit of interest from Yale my senior year. And that was mostly because there was a big time prospect playing at Loomis, who's Jaden Dallaire, who now plays for the Celtics G League team.
Wow.
And he was unbelievable, and they wanted, and they came to KO, and we played them, and I played the best game of my life. Like, if you put current Jackson at that time in that game with a million games, I would have never played as well as I did this game. So Yale showed a little interest in me then, but I think they realized that I just wasn't good. And looking back on it now, like I wasn't good enough at that point in high school. Like, to be completely honest with myself, like, I just wasn't. Like, I watched my high school highlights. I watched a game recently. It's just, that's not a D1 player. But anyways, I just got every school in the NEPSAC. No, sorry, in the NESCAC. I get this confused all the time. The NESCAC, so
Don't
those
worry.
Williams, Tufts, Amherst, that conference, Trinity, have reached out to me, and every school in the Liberty League. I think every single school in the Liberty League had reached out to me. So I took visits to like all of these super high academic and usually pretty good basketball programs. And I had visited a bunch of these schools, and the only school I really hadn't heard from was Hobart. And my college counselor at KO played lacrosse at Hobart, and he had Hobart's flags all around his office. And so I was meeting with him, and I was telling him about all the schools I visited. And he says, "Well, have you visited Hobart? Like, I went there and loved it. And you're visiting all these schools that are just like Hobart. Like, maybe it would be a great fit for you." So that night I went, and actually my AAU coach, Mike Roddy, the Middlesex Magic guy, he's pretty famous now. Like, everyone knows him in the
There's
New England
connections
basketball world.
everywhere, man.
Yeah. He set me up with Coach Sweeney, who at the time was the head coach at Hobart. Actually, Steph was only an
He
assistant.
coached that con now, right?
Yep. So he's the coach at Conn College now. And Coach Sweeney called me up, and he said, like, "Hey man, like, I'm sorry we hadn't reached out to you. We assumed you were just going to the to the NESCAC. Like, we just thought you were a Middlesex Magic guy. You're going to the NESCAC, and it was done with. We thought like it'd be a waste of our time, but we love you. And like, he was like, I saw you play this, this, and this game. Like, you did this great. So he knew exactly who I was. And I said, well, no, like, to be completely honest, in the NESCAC, there's like A band, B band, C band at the time there was. And like, so A band students are like 1600 SAT 4.0. And B band is just like slightly below that. And C band is like slightly below that. So like, I had a 3.5, 3.6 at KO. And I'm forgetting my SAT score exactly. But like, my resume in terms of getting into schools was pretty strong. Like, I had AP classes, I had a pretty good GPA. And the NESCAC schools were saying to me, like, yeah, we like your game, but you're not good enough for us to use our C band because they can only have two C band players on one team at a time. And they all said to me, like, we like your game, but you're not good enough academically for us to use one of our C bands like spots for you. Which, looking back, I've actually had multiple coaches that had recruited me, like, text me or call me or see me somewhere and say, wow, like, we really screwed that one up. Like, if we could go back in time, we would take you in a heartbeat as one of our C band guys, no problem. And obviously, like, hindsight's 2020. Like, I had a great career, but I just think it's funny. But anyways, so I went up to Hobart, and Hobart was the only school where I got on campus and the whole coaching staff was there waiting for me and players. And like, I got there and there were four coaches there. It was Coach Sweeney, Coach Steph, Coach Smiley, who is at Fredonia now, and Coach P was there, and they were all there waiting for me. And like, I'm not gonna say that's the only reason I went there, but it's definitely didn't hurt. And then I ran around with the guys, and I loved all the guys. I had a good visit, had a great visit, met with career services, and just I left there. And I said to my mom, like, on the way home, I said, I'm gonna ED to Hobart. Like, I just made up my mind on that visit. Like, that's where I wanna be. They want me. They've put together this whole visit for me, which now I know we do for a lot of people, but at the time it felt like really special for me because it's just like, the amount of care and the amount of effort that Steph and the staff and Coach Swing at the time were willing to put in to a visit, like, that's the attention to detail that I want in a game. That's the attention to detail I want in film too. Like, if we don't have that attention to detail when I'm on campus and I'm supposedly your number one recruit, which is what a lot of these schools in the Liberty League told me, then I can't trust you to be that focused when it comes game time. And that was part of it. And the second thing was, I said to my mom, like, I want to find a place where if I snap my leg and I can't play basketball ever again, like, I still think I'm going to be happy and I still think I'm going to be able to have a successful career doing something other than basketball. And I felt that Hobart was the place to do that.
100%. Did you play pickup when you went as well?
I actually didn't play pickup because I was dealing with like some knee tendonitis. And it was, I forget when it was, but I watched pickup. No, I watched a practice. I watched a practice. And so I couldn't have played pickup anyways. But I was out that weekend as well. I didn't play pickup. But I know a lot of the recruits play pickup and usually enjoy it. Like, that's sometimes one of the reasons we get guys is because pickup is good at Hobart, I think.
Really competitive guys like end up almost like fighting each other sometimes, but like that's good. It, like bring out the competitive side of each other. It's like we don't go out there and like BS, which I really like about it. Like no,
Yeah.
we don't take anything lightly. But to connect to your point about why you chose Hobart, I actually got familiar with Hobart by coming to watch you guys play. I believe you guys played against Oswego last year. I came up with John Mark's host dad, Mr. Ruskin, and then like watch you guys play. I remember they kept like dropping it to you at like that like short elbow right there, the high post, and you kept going one on one, taking it to the rim that game. And I was like, I saw like how well you guys were like really poised and like how it was like a system based aspect of it. And I was like, wow, like I really like want to be a part of this. And then I ended up applying late because I was like still like trying to see if I can go to one of those NESCAC schools like Williams or Amherst. But then
Same.
yeah, man. And but then say, funny thing is a lot of the guys at Salisbury, they went to Hobart as well, like Bobby Wynn He's like in the on our wall of fame out in Bristol. He for like football and lacrosse. Another guy, Mr. Warder, he like worked at admissions over there. So like I heard like so many good things about the school, and I went up and visited. I like met a couple of the guys, and then I don't know, I kind of like fell in love with the place, and I was like, screw it, let's see what happens. And then here I am. But
Sure.
so going into your freshman year at Hobart, what was your mindset?
Well, I know I kind of talked about when I was at EO Smith how my mindset going into sophomore year was like, I'm going to start varsity. And that ended up being like a success. So, on the complete other hand, I was going into Hobart and I was saying, like, I don't care that they're returning four seniors and who are and two guys on the team that are also currently pros. No, wait. The two of the seniors my freshman year went to play pro. One of them still playing. And then Tucker was on the team too, Tucker Lesko, who ended up being like first team all league his senior year. And Dan Messina, who was the Liberty League Rookie of the Year. Like, I went in and I said, I don't care about all this. Like, I'm starting on this team. Like, I will be starting on this team. I don't want to have to play the five, but I will play the five because the guys that played one through four were all borderline, like all league guys. And I said, okay, I'm going to play the five. I'm going to start. And to fast forward to the end of the year, I didn't play a single minute in the playoffs. I played 3 minutes in the quarterfinals, and I didn't play a single minute in the semifinals or the finals. So obviously that year was tough. I still think I could have helped the team, but I kind of, the season started and I was nervous. And I was coming off the bench and I was a little uncomfortable with that just because I hadn't come off the bench hardly ever in my
Right.
life. I didn't play well to start the year, and then minutes were just really spotty. Like, I
Yeah.
think I played average 5 minutes a game. And I was getting frustrated because I felt like I was working really hard, like all the time, extra, 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 but I was just confidence kept steamrolling in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just, I felt like I hit my lowest point in terms of basketball. When I just didn't play in the playoffs. Like, I felt like our coaching staff didn't have confidence in me. And like, looking back, I wasn't confident in myself. So like, I can't really expect them to be confident in me. I was still frustrated. And with that being said, like, I have talked to Coach Sweeney, who was the coach at the time. I actually still work out with him at Conn College because it's about 25 minutes from our house here in
Right.
Connecticut. And he said to me, like, he admitted to me, like, I kind of butchered that freshman year. Like, looking
Wow.
back on it, I wish I'd given you more opportunity because obviously you were ready. Like, obviously looking back at sophomore year, I didn't go from a bench warmer to, you know, leading the team and scoring as a Sweet 16 team by my sophomore year. Like, I didn't make that huge of a jump. So he's admitted that to me. But I actually think I'm happy about that. Like, in retrospect, that freshman year, like, it humbles you to sit through at the bench, and
Yeah.
it gives you fire, and it makes you appreciate a bigger role, and it
Yep.
makes you also makes you appreciate the guys when you have a bigger role that aren't playing.
Also the game too, I feel like
Yeah, I th
as a whole.
yeah, so I think, like, not playing, I think every player should experience like a year of not playing, whether that's when they're super young, whether that's in college, when they're underclassmen. Like, I think it just shapes your personality better. And it, on top of like learning how to support your teammates and learning how to put your ego on the back burner, it also makes you want the minutes more, like makes you want a role more. So I think, like, again, if that hadn't happened and I started playing right away, I wouldn't have grinded like I did every summer and looked up, woken up and looked at the top of my room where I'd written, you weren't good enough to start, you weren't good enough to play. Like, that motivated me every day. But I wouldn't have grinded like that if I had just gone in and played all the time. So I think that helped me.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, you know how I mentioned before that Hobart's kind of like a system, like everyone eats, like everyone has like their specific role. So like you said before that you mainly had the ball in your hands a lot throughout your AAU and high school career. What was it like to adapt to the style of play at Hobart?
Yeah, well, I think not just for me, this goes for everyone. If you're playing college basketball, you're a good player. Even a team that struggles at the Division III level, most of those guys in that team can go home and play pickup and look like an absolute superstar. Like,
Right.
that's just the case. That's just how it is. So I think the reason a lot of people struggle and the reason some teams struggle in college is because everybody at their high school was the guy.
Yep.
Usually, unless you're at NMH or Brewster or one of those crazy prep schools where, or Mont or whatever it may be, where you got 12 Division I players for the most part, everyone on the college team was the man at their high school.
Right.
So there's only going to be one guy who's the man, and then like two tertiary or secondary, tertiary like guys on each team. So that's an adjustment for everyone. But it was hard. Like, I realized it the first day I pick up my freshman year. I said, wow, like, I've got to do other things. Like, I need to rebound and defend and just finish open layups. And then this is a struggle that everyone goes through. And then every year your role increases. But it was growing pains and it was me being frustrated and it was me feeling like I was out of rhythm because I didn't have the ball when I
Right.
had been so used to having the ball my whole life. So I think, like I said, every player should go be on a team where they're not playing much or they're a role player. But like the guys that do really well at every level are the ones who can play with the ball in their hand, who can play without it. And I wasn't very good without it. And that freshman year, I had to adjust, I had to learn, and even sophomore year advancing, like that's something I had to learn. And I'm grateful for that opportunity and that, life lesson.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, you didn't sit the bench for too long. Like your sophomore year, which was the 2019-2020 season, we saw you like took a really big jump that year. So like that season you took home honors such as the D3hoops.com All East Third Team, USBWA All Rochester Area First Team, All Liberty League First Team, and even led the Liberty League in double doubles with seven of them. So let's start in the off season heading into that year. What were your goals during that off season heading into your sophomore year? I know you mentioned you writing like those motivating words on your wall, but what else like did you do to like propel yourself into this role that year?
Yeah, so I went home and I said to myself, like, I mean, you know how you have these thoughts and you go on in your head, like, what can I get? Or at least for me, what can I get better at? How am I going to do this? Like, how am I going to play? What's the steps here? And I said to myself, like, I'm a decent athlete. I never shoot the ball and I can't really put the ball on the floor. So, like, this is lofty, but I said, I want to come back and be an above average athlete who will shoot open threes and get to the rim off of closeouts. Like, and those things seem very simple, but that's not that simple to do in one summer. So I started, again, Brad Seaman, the coach at KU, recommended this NBA trainer, Paul Favorites. He does PJF Performance. My brothers do it. I do it now. But I bought his program, the Vert Code, and started training like a basketball player, training like an athlete. Like everything I did, even strength-wise, was to be explosive. Like everything had a purpose behind it. I wasn't doing like four sets of 12 on the leg extension trying to get big quads because that's not helping me play basketball. So everything I did was explosive. I started really doing the plyometrics. I started really being on a plan. And I just worked out all the time. Like, so I would just get up and I was working at KO that summer, as like an administrator for the summer camps they do, which meant I got access to the gyms whenever I wanted. So I'd get there before school and I would lift and I would do this lift. So it was 3 days a week of legs and plyos and 2 to 3 days a week of like mobility, core work. And then I would add in some upper body stuff when I saw it necessary. And then I'd work all day, and at lunch, the kids had lunch from 12 to 1. I would hoop. I would hop on the gun, I would hoop, I'd work on my handle, I'd do whatever. And then the day would end and we'd play pickup at KO. And this was every day for the entire summer. And it was exhausting. And I would go home on weekends and just sleep. Like Saturday I would do a light lift, maybe get some shots up, and Saturday, Sunday I was sleeping. So that's what I did all summer. And like I had honestly thought about like if this season goes like last season, I just might not be good enough to cut it. And I need to focus my energy somewhere else. And I said, this is my, like, this is it right here. I'm all in for this summer and see what happens. And then we got back to school. And I kind of noticed a pickup, like, I was kind of doing more what I wanted. Like, I wasn't getting moved by the bigger guys. I wasn't getting blown by as much. And I would shoot the open threes. Like, I had made progress in the places I wanted to make progress, but I still was like, lacking a little confidence. And then the year started, and I was in the rotation a little more, but it was like 7 or 8 minutes to start. And I remember we played a game, we lost. I played 7 or 8 minutes, and I saw my mom, and like I kind of broke down a little bit. Like I just felt like I had busted my ass the whole summer. And it's just selfishly, I wanted to play, I wanted to roll. And like during the games, I wanted to win, even if I wasn't playing, but I wanted to roll. And my mom just told me, like, stay true to the course, Jax. Like, your family's always going to support you. And like, you put in all this work this summer. Like, you just need one opportunity. You just need one opportunity. And then I toughed it out. We had one more game that was. I played again 7, 8 minutes, and then we played. It was either U of R or Fisher, but we played them back to back. And I went in and I like immediately got an easy layup to start the game, and then I got another one, and so that's 4 quick points. And like again, my confidence is super shaken, but I went in and I scored 4 quick points, and so like I was like, okay, like. This is the opportunity. My mom just talked to me about it. Here's the opportunity. And then, like, I got the ball swung to me, and U of R had a big All-American who was a really, really good player. And I ripped it, and I was had half a step on him. I bumped him off, finished over the top of him, and I looked at my dad who was on the baseline, like going crazy. And then I was running back on defense, and I like felt the swagger come back. Like I felt the whole year of like. Doubting myself, I felt it like just like start to like fizz out of me, not fizz out of me, but start to like evaporate into the air. And I,
Like a
from there,
weight
it just
got
took
lifted off
over.
you, kind
Yeah,
of.
I felt like a weight got lifted over me. I was like, I just took it to this guy who's supposed to be unbelievable. And he is, he's a really good player. Ryan Nausier, who was an unbelievable player at U of R. And I end the game with like 15 points and 7 rebounds. And I ended up like finishing the game. Like I didn't start the game, but I ended up finishing it. And then the next game, we played Fisher, I think. And it was the same idea. Like I went in, played 15 minutes. I think I had 15 points in 15 minutes. I made a three. I took their another like all league guy off the dribble, got to the rim, and finished that game again. And so from there, it kind of just took off. And it was luck. Like, I got lucky. I ran the floor twice, and because I was a nobody at the time, I
There's no
got two wide
scout,
open
man.
layups. Yeah, there's minimal scout, and then we play one more game, and then we go up to St. Lawrence and Clarkson, and Dan Cook, who was currently a freshman at the time on our team, was starting, was sick, and so I slid right into the starting lineup where he was playing the four. And my first game as a starter, we beat Clarkson, and I had another good game, like 17 points, 10 rebounds, a couple assists, like played 32 minutes, and I was exhausted after because I'm not used to playing that much. But then we go to play SLU the next game. It's my second game ever as a starter. And we just that zone is weak at the high post. They play that extended 2-3 zone. So I think one, I got two dunks early in the game off of just they zip passes. I was in the dunker spot, caught it and dunked it. And then I kept getting high post touches and just quick rips, nothing complicated. I ended the game with 37-7.
Sheesh.
And it was like I'm making passes I didn't even think I knew how to do. I'm making moves that I didn't even know were in my bag. It was like I did all this training over the summer, and
And
that
it felt
definitely helped me.
perfect.
But then like I had all the stuff that I apparently could do, but I just needed like that weight lifted off my chest. So then we go home and Coach Steph calls me into his office. Or no, yeah, Coach Steph calls me into his office because he's our head coach now. Coach Sweeney went to Conn. And he says, like, we like you off the bench, but you're gonna be in the starting lineup now. And I gotta shout out Jake Preston, who's still a good friend of mine, because he was starting for most of the year up to that point, and he kind of got bent, not benched. He still was in the rotation, but he took a like minute decrease to let me start, essentially. And the coaches had met with him before they met with me, and they asked and they said, like, we want to do this. And apparently he was all on board. And he was my biggest supporter the rest of the year. Like a lesser man, a guy with an ego, a guy who only cares about himself would have been all pissed off that him as a senior lost their starting spot to me as a sophomore. He was my biggest supporter, and he's still like one of my biggest supporters of all time. And I got put in the starting lineup, and for me, it kind of just took off from there. And I had two unbelievable guards, Dan Mussino and Tucker, and then Edens and Sam split time at the five, and then me and Dan Cook played as our big wings or power forwards, and it just we all fit together so well. And that team was outrageous because I felt like I was at that time a plus defender, like a pretty good defender, and I was the worst defender on the floor most of the time with that team. So, like, I ended up leading us in scoring, but that's because we had these guys dogging themselves all day, like playing defense, doing whatever. And I just would swoop in for rebounds. I just get easy buckets. And I would get one-on-one post-ups because Dan and Tucker shot the ball so well. So that year was unbelievable for me. It was a perfect situation and a lot of luck on top of the fact that I worked really hard that summer. So that's kind of the long version of how sophomore year ended up.
Well, you guys did a really good job. I mean, like, you guys ended up making it to the second round of the NCAA tournament. Can you talk a little bit about the experience of playing in the NCAA tournament and having like this big of a role on a team like so early into your college career?
Yeah, so like for me, one of the best situations to be in sports, specifically basketball, is when no one thinks you can win and no one even thinks you can compete, right? So we lost to Ithaca in the Liberty League semifinals after an unbelievable year, and we all thought we were done. Like, we thought we were done. We went to lift the next day because we thought we had a puncher's chance to make it as an at-large. And we thought we were done. We thought we were done. And then Monday comes and we're sitting in there and they call us and they give us an at-large bid to go to Springfield and play St. Joe's, who is like a powerhouse. Like, they hadn't lost a game in months. They were scoring 106 points a game, something crazy out of control like that. And I've got guys from Connecticut texting me like, yo, you're playing St. Joe's, you're gonna get smoked. Like, you guys have no chance. They're like, you're gonna give up 900 points, whatever. And I just said, okay, like, that's great. Like, good. So it's a win-win kind of. Like, if you lose, you're supposed to lose. And if you win, it's like the best day ever. So we go to St. Joe's, and they've got a huge crowd there because it's Springfield. They're in Hartford, it's a 45-minute drive. But we also had a lot of fans there from Hobart alums and whatnot. And we start the game, and they can't score. Like, they just couldn't score on us. And we were just playing so free. And every time they made a run, we just calmed down and handled what they were doing. And I don't think they had seen a team with like our discipline before. And I think that was very confusing even to them. So we ended up winning that game. But in terms of me, for my role, I think I was, again, like I said, I was in a perfect situation. I didn't have to guard their best players, who at the time were all guards. And I just got to play in an offense. Like, I didn't have to ISO. I didn't have to score 40 points. I could just play. And when I got my opportunities, I would take them. And if I didn't, then we could still win. So that was a great place to be in. And I just felt super comfortable with that team and with Coach Def and everything. And then we move on to play Springfield. And they're supposedly better than St. Joe's. Like
Yeah.
everyone had been looking forward to the Springfield St. Joe's matchup. Oh, it's going to be a good one. Springfield should win. People had predicted Springfield to go to the Final Four. And we were down about eight with like 8 minutes left, or 13 with 8 minutes left. And Steph just put his confidence in me and just drew up a couple sets just for quick ISOs. And I remember the first time we drew up a set, I get a cross screen, I catch it, and I attack middle and got fouled. And I look over at Steph, and he's telling me to tell all the Springfield guys how they can't guard me. He's like, Jax, tell everyone on the floor they can't guard you. Like you're taking over this game and they cannot guard you. And I didn't say that because I was still kind of a more quiet guy at that point.
Yeah.
But like, I was just like, wow, like, again, if we lose, we lose. But my coach has got my back this much. Like, he's put all of his trust in me. And then we end up making a crazy comeback. I had a couple big buckets down the stretch. And then obviously, I think everyone at Hobart has seen it. 7 seconds, 6 seconds left, and we inbound the ball to Damasceno. He goes the full length of the court for a buzzer beater layup to win the game. And it was absolute mayhem in Springfield. Like, their whole student section, the entire side of the gym at Springfield, which is a huge gym, was just like shocked. And so we're all yelling at the fans, like, get out of here. This is our court now, whatever. And it was just surreal. Like, I just looked up at my parents and it was just unbelievable to go from like, I'm in tears with my mom at the beginning of the year after a loss and I'm not playing much, to then having the team accept me as one of the main guys and people give up roles, and to go to the Sweet 16 like that was just unbelievable. And like, I'll never forget that team and everything they did for me. And like, that was probably the most fun I've ever had playing basketball, for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't mean to go off on a tangent here, but like, I don't understand how like none of you guys are Heat fans. Like, I get garbage. I've been getting garbage like the whole year being like a Heat fan from your brothers, Aiden, Gabe, like all these guys. Like, all the stories that all you guys tell are like reminding me of like Jimmy Butler and the Heat last year when he was saying like, I don't care what none of y'all think and all this stuff. Like, we're just gonna go out there and compete, and they end up getting the job done. But like, sorry, I just had to mention that because
Yeah.
it like kind of pisses me off a little bit. But
yeah, well, I'm a Celtics fan
yeah.
because I live in Connecticut. So, like, it's tough. The Celtics just – they just clench up and poop themselves every time they play the Heat. So, like – but I respect the Heat a lot. Like, I respect Spoelstra in the way that it literally does not matter who's on that floor. They're going to make it tough in the playoffs. Like, they could – like, Eric Spoelstra could take our team at Hobart and have them compete in an NBA game. I'm convinced of it. Like, obviously that's an exaggeration, but like, it's almost to that level.
Yeah, I feel like it's all the adjustments they make over the course. Like, we saw it this year in the game two in Boston this year. I mean, they were like, had no Terry Rozier, no Jimmy Butler, and they still found out a way to pull that win out. Like, it's not, it wasn't sustainable enough this year.
No, I think when there's that big of a talent gap, you
Yeah.
just gotta just jack threes and hope you get hot and you can win one like that.
Yeah,
Like,
that's, they shot like, that was like a franchise record of threes made. Like, you can't sustain that level of shooting over the course of the series.
Like, not to feed your tangent, but I know a lot of people think like, if your team is at a talent gap, if there's a talent gap and you're not as good as the other team, you should slow the game down and play it really slow. But I think that's garbage. Because I think that just delays the inevitable. Like, if you make it a possession game, the better team's going to win.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if you're at a talent disadvantage, you want to speed it up and hope you get hot from three. And just chuck a lot of threes and just hope you get hot. And on any given night, an NBA team can get hot and beat anyone else. So I love that adjustment from him. I think they should have shot more threes in the games 3 through 5, honestly.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens next year with them, but let's get back to your career. So,
all right.
After the big accomplishment of making it to the second round, there was a little slowdown the next year. The 2020-2021 season was canceled due to COVID. So, like, can you talk a little bit about your experience during this time and what were its biggest challenges coming off of like that, such a big high, and now you're just like plateaued kind of?
Yeah. Well, I mean, COVID was really tough when it hit because we were at Christopher Newport in Virginia, I think. And we were there. We were gearing up to play the game. Like, we had seen the guys on Christopher Newport the day before. Like, there's no beef or anything, but they had said to us, like, yo, we've sold every single ticket for our arena right now. And they like have a full arena. Like, I don't know if you've
Wow.
seen that gym or not,
Never
but
seen.
it is an arena. Like,
Really?
that place is insane. And we practiced on it. And we were fired up. And we thought that Christian Newport that year wasn't as strong as the two teams we had just beaten.
Right. Okay.
Like, they were definitely very, very good, but we thought they weren't as strong as Springfield that year. Now, who knows? Like, we'll never actually know. But we're at practice the day before and the country's shutting down. And we all kind of knew it was coming. And then I see our assistant coach smiling, get a phone call and walk away. And I said, yeah, like that's the end of that. And we finished the practice and they huddle up, and my voice keeps cracking. They huddle up and they tell us what happened. And we decided as a team to play 30 more minutes of pickup together and have it be our last time on the floor together. So that was awesome, but it was also really, really sad because we thought we had a chance to extend our run even further. And we wanted all that time together. Like, that team was just such a great year. And we didn't even have time to go back to Hobart and like party and celebrate afterwards,
Yeah.
after like the probably the best season in the history of the school. Like, we went home and it shut down. So that was really tough. But I decided to take a gap year to kind of hedge my bets and take a gap year and stay home during the COVID year.
Right.
I had floated the idea by Coach Steph, and I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And he said to me, like, yeah, to be honest with you, Jax, like, I think there's maybe a 20% chance the season gets played this year. Maybe. And he said, think about it, like, if you take a gap year, that's a chance for maybe 2 years to play with your brothers who were wrapping up the commitment process. That's a chance for you to stay home and probably have more time to work out, and a chance for you to, not have to be here when everything's essentially shut down and be miserable, because Coach Steph knows that if I can't go in the gym and lift, then I'm going to be really grumpy and not fun to be around.
Right.
So I ended up making that choice to stay home. And I took a job at E.O. Smith, actually my old school, as like a permanent sub for math, and then also did some Spanish tutoring and math tutoring as well. I speak Spanish. I le actually learned a good deal of my Spanish at Hobart, but that's a story for a different day. So I stayed home and ended up coaching the freshmen at EO and assisting on varsity. So that was a great experience as well. But I think my game took another leap because I met randomly at a community gym. I met Ryan Fitzpatrick, who was a pro. He played at Bucknell. He played with Mike Muscala at Bucknell. So
Okay.
he was telling me stories. He always telling me stories about Mike. But he was like, I was looking for a front court guy, like a power forward, small forward to work out with, because he's about my size, plays the four. And so I met him, and then we just started training every day during the week. Like, not every day. Some weeks it was every day. Most weeks it was at least 3 and 4 days a week. And it would be go in, and we would do shooting on the move, which is what I really wanted to work on. We would do some ball handling, but it was usually a lot of shooting. And then we would play post 1-on-1 for 30 minutes, and he would absolutely annihilate me every single day. Like, every single day, he would annihilate me. And I kept saying to myself, like, listen, if you can just, by the end of this year, keep working out, if you can play him even, if you can play him even, that would be great. And because he's, at this point, he's a 7-year, 8-year veteran playing overseas. Like, he is a legit professional basketball player. And I was just a Division III kid who just had a good year and thought that's all it was. But training with him every day. And by the end of the year, I was playing him. Not even. He was still beating me most of the time, but we played a seven from various spots. And at the beginning of the year, it'd be like 7-1. And then by the end, it was usually, if I lost, it was 7-5, 7-6. So, like, I could at least compete with him. And I thought that was big growth. And like this is a, I tell that story all the time. When I like have youth kids who ask me, or when I'm training kids, I say like, if you quit something because it's hard, you're never going to get better.
Right.
Like if I play one-on-one with some random kid at the Y and I beat them 19 to nothing every time, like my ego maybe is defeated, but that doesn't help me at all. So I'm so glad I stuck with that because I got so much better because I was willing to get my ass handed to me every day for the whole year. So, and sometimes that's necessary. But then I just train with him every single day, every day. And then we ended up forming like a pro-am team over the summer. And I got a Brian had a couple friends, and me and my other buddy, Dave Bradbury, played at Franklin Pierce. We put together a pro-am team, and I just played in the pro-am and played against like pros and Division One guys all summer. And
Wow.
that just, I just like leveled up again. I just felt like I leveled up again. And I gotten to the point where, like, for me now, the best way to level up is to just hoop with guys that are better than you. Like, I had gotten the skill. I could shoot the ball. I could put on the floor now. I was strong enough. But at some point, you just have to play with guys better than you, and your body will catch up, and you'll have to be creative. So that was most of my gap year. And that's the year I honestly think I leveled up the most that year, more than any other year of my life, just because I was getting my butt kicked every single day.
Yeah, I totally know what you're talking about. I would actually like this whole spring that just passed. I would always hit up like Aiden and Pat to like do like situation drills and like get some guard work in. Those guys are like so hard to stay in front of. They would be beating me. Like I would only score like 1 point or so, but I feel like I like got better towards the end of it. Like I was actually like winning a couple drills before like we left, and like they were like pretty pissed off. They were like. Later, we went to Odell's and they're like, I've never seen you make as many shots like that like before in my life. Like that was
That's
insane.
awesome.
And then but then they
That's great.
kind of killed me like the next day after that. But like I kept coming back. I kept going back. That was the main point. That's the main
Well,
point.
that's awesome. And like with that, I give my brothers credit too, because they're always down to play me in ones. And I beat them almost ex every time. And they're always down to keep going. And every it is funny though, every year they come home and they're like, we're gonna get you this summer, like we leveled up this year. And I'm like, well, I kind of leveled up too, so like that's that. But I respect my brothers for that. And actually Gabe would text me all the time last year and say to me like, can we play ones today, like I need to guard you, I need to guard you. Like, so that I think that is something that's awesome about the kids at Hobart, that a lot of you guys that are still there currently had that same attitude that I have, where like, I'm going to find someone better than me and I'm going to play with them over and over.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to get better. Like, of course, you still need to get shots up on your own. Of course, you need to do conditioning. Of course, you need to do ball handling. But like, you need to be put in live situations, whether that's ones, threes, fives, with people that are a lot better than you,
Yep.
because that's where you can test out the things you've been trying, and also where you're playing against someone way better than you who's a good defender. You have to be creative with what you're doing, or else you're just going to get the ball punched back towards half court. So that's where like you start to develop your bag, if you want to call it. Like that's what you want to call it. That's what the youngins like to call it these days. So
Yeah, I totally agree. So, heading into your third season at Hobart after your gap year, the 2021-2022 season, how did it feel to get back on the court like in an actual game setting after basically like a whole year without it?
yeah. I was super excited, and like to be honest, because I've come to accept this myself, I came back and my head had gotten a little too big. Like my ego, I was kind of thinking like, oh, I trained with these pros, I played in this pro-am with Division One guys, whatever, I'm gonna come back and just kill everyone this year. That's not always how things work. So I came back and I was super excited to get back on the floor, but my attitude sucked. And it started to carry over. And we had a really rough year. And I had a rough year. Like, I put up pretty solid numbers, but I also turned the ball over a lot. I also forced things a lot. And also didn't make my teammates better like I should have. So, like, I look back on it now, and again, it's another growing experience. But that junior year was tough. And I was kind of the only returning guy from that Sweet 16 team. And everyone was new. And again, my attitude sucked. So it was really a tough year of meshing. We just never got it right. I didn't lead us very well, even though I was kind of the only one with a lot of experience. And it kind of just like kind of humbled me again. Like my freshman year, I got humbled. Confidence was low. Sophomore year, I came back. And kind of by the end of that sophomore year and gap year, I'd shot the other direction where I was too big for my britches. So that junior year humbled me again. And I think that led into senior year where I did a lot of self-reflecting and came back in the perfect place where I was confident but comfortable. But to answer your question about junior year, I was really excited. And then I ran into a lot of unexpected hiccups. But again, that just kind of made me and us stronger coming back for the next year.
Well, your senior year, you seemed to get it all together. You took home honors. This is a lot here. I gotta take a deep breath here. All right, NABC All-American Third Team, D3Hoops.com All-American Third Team, NABC Reese's Senior All-Star, D3Hoops Regional Player of the Year. You were the also D3.com All-Regional First Team, the NABC All-Regional First Team, the Liberty League Player of the Year, as I mentioned before. And all Liberty League first team. So when you see all of these accolades that I've just stated, what comes to mind as you reflect on your career as ho at Hobart as well?
Yeah, well, that's a long list, but
Sorry, pretty loaded question there. Sorry about that.
yeah. So, what I think, what I reflect on the most is that you have to kind of understand that there's going to be tough parts in a career to appreciate the good ones. Like, I was just reading a book, and I can't say the title because it has a bad word in it, but it's basically about ex the people that are happy in life accept that there's some things that are going to be pretty awful and that they're going to have to deal with that. And the people that are unhappy are always just trying to make everything perfect and try and say, oh, everything's great all the time. Because everything's not great all the time. Like some things are going to be bad. My freshman year, I had a rough year. My junior year, I had a rough year. But after those years, I reflected, I said, okay, this was rough. What can be better? Like I said, sophomore year, I said, if every year is like this, then I need to find something else. But every year is not going to be like this. I'm going to put everything into it and come back. And so I think the biggest thing I learned from my 4 years at Hobart is that you have to go through the trenches to appreciate like when you're on top. And you have to accept that being a college athlete is not all sunshine and rainbows, and that some things are going to be awful. And if you can accept that some parts are going to be awful and you're going to lack confidence, then you can really appreciate and be happy about the good parts. And like the happiest people are happy about the great parts and understand that the rough parts are just growing experiences. So that was kind of a big lesson for me. But in terms of like my isolated senior year, I said this before in like the Athlete of the Year speech, which I gave last year, at Block H, and I'll say it again, but I had a great year, my senior year, and lots of voters, D3 Hoops, whatever you want to talk about, honored me as an All-American, as all these things. But I wouldn't have been able to do that without the team. Like I tell Pat Walker all the time, like, if I wasn't on this team getting all these shots, getting all these touches, you could have been first team all league easily. Like, easily. We saw it this year. Pat Healy, first team all league. My brother was second team, and Aiden was honorable mention. Like, they had it in them, but they kind of sacrificed for what we felt was the greater good of the team, which was me having the ball in my hands a lot. So, like, I shouted out Pat Walker, Pat Healy, Aiden, Carter. They all took a little bit of back seats, and then my friends too, David, and Andrew Lynch, like they were supporting me the whole time. Like there was never any jealousy,
Right.
I felt, and that's really rare on a college team. Like a lot of people would have said, like, why is Steph drawing up every other play for Jackson? Like, why is he shooting 20 times this game? Why he just had seven turnovers last game? Like, why are we still trusting him? There wasn't any of that. Like, they all trusted me. So that's like when I look back at college, the first point I made about accepting the bad parts and appreciating the good ones. And secondly, like, I was just so lucky to have these friends and teammates who kind of let me thrive, because I wouldn't be able to get paid to play if I didn't have teammates and coaches who were willing to put me in the driver's seat and say, okay, Jack, it's time for you to go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, like, I feel like that's like, yeah, we talk about, like, I'm sure you've heard a lot about it. Like, we talk about like pillars a lot in our locker room and stuff like that. I feel like that's like the bigger than basketball aspect of like the program there. It's like every man is like the game, it will always be there, but it's like how we act like off the court with each other, how we're like mainly like act as a family to each other. I feel like that's like the biggest part of our program at the end of the day.
And it's just like the lack of jealousy last year, because it's not easy when you have one guy who gets like some ridiculous award every single week, or has everyone telling him how great he is. Or like when I walk into Alamo and we have people over, they're like, oh my God, like you had an unbelievable game. Like you won that game for Hobart. I'm like, no, I didn't, guys. Like I didn't win anything. We won. And
Right.
like, that can't be easy to be on the team and see someone else just receiving all the accolades. And then if you're losing, you feel like you lose as a team. But when we win, like one guy gets a lot of credit. And I think that's a toxic aspect of sports in society today. We're like, we played some games where I wasn't great and we still won.
Right.
And then we played some games where, again, I wasn't great and we lost. And I didn't get blamed for that, where like I felt personally like part of that was on my shoulders, but I didn't have that. But the reason that we didn't turn on each other was because my teammates were so awesome and had no egos. And again, they let me rock and they put me in the best positions.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I had to bring this up. You hit the game-winning shot on that was featured on the SportsCenter top 10. You guys are tied with the Union with 0.8 seconds left to go in the game. Pat Healy throws you a Hail Mary inbounds pass from the other side of the court. You caught, turned around, and banked that shot in, kind of like LeBron did against Washington all those years ago. So, like,
Yeah.
was that like the particular play that Coach Steph had called that he drew up in the huddle?
That was one option of the play. I think Steph's so great in end of game situations. Like, I feel like he always has a play that will at least get us a good look. That doesn't mean we always make it, but we always tend to get a good look towards the end of games. At least that's my feeling. So there was three separate options on that play, and that's just the one that kind of opened up for us. It could have easily have been Pat Walker received the ball because we were kind of it ro rotating in a circle, and we kind of broke when the ball was, put into play to Pat out of bounds. And Pat threw an unreal pass, and I caught it and chucked it at the rim and fully got lucky and bank that shot in. Like, I think everyone in the world knows I'm not trying to bank that shot in.
You could have been like LeBron and said, I work on that.
No, I don't work on banking in that shot falling out of bounds into my bench. So, it was high skill from Coach Steph, high skill from Pat throwing a pinpoint pass, and a lot of luck from me to basically have a miracle go in. So, got to give all the credit again, give all the credit to my teammates. And take away everyone telling me like how great it was. Like, it's like I said with the whole season, like my teammates deserve more credit and less of the blame. There's no blame here, but my teammates deserve more credit for that one because I just got lucky. Pat actually had a skillful basketball play. So
Yeah, I got you. So currently you play professionally in Luxembourg, as I mentioned before, for Aventi Mondorf. What was your experience like playing there for like the first time overseas? And what was the transition like from going from the college game to now professional basketball?
So I'll answer that backwards in the way you asked it. The transition in terms of play style is not that hard, I felt. I think you hear about the transition from college to pros all the time, but in that transition, they're referring to the NBA, right? So in the NBA, one, the 3-point line's a little deeper, and two, the biggest thing is there's defense in 3 seconds. In Europe, there's no defense in 3 seconds, so the game ends up being very similar to college. And the major differences are the shot clock's 24, and like backcourt, you have 8 seconds to get over. That only comes into effect once in a while. But those differences, the way the game's played now, you rarely have shot clock violations. Like whether it's 24 or 30, I can't remember us having any this year at all, because you just play so fast and you get into your actions as quickly as you can. And when you're running a ball screen, like it's a high ball screen, like you see the NBA guys all the time, they just end up running variations of high ball screen most of the time. If they're in drop coverage, it's just a read for your guard, either fling it back to a popping big or have some sort of floater. If they're a switch, that's a mismatch, and you attack that. And if they hard hedge, it's short roll to then 4-on-3 and make a play. So the shot clock doesn't affect it that much. I think like the difference is the best players in Europe are better than the best players in college, because especially for me, because most of the Americans in Europe were Division I players. Like, I'm the only Division III guy that was on the floor in any of the games we had this year, as far as I know. No, wait, there was one other. But just the best players are better. And to go overseas, you have to usually play at a scholarship level and be one of the better players, so the level is just elevated. But in terms of adjustment in the game, it was pretty minimal for me, I would say. And on top of that, I'd already trained during the summer for the minor adjustments that I would see. So
Like the
I was pretty
ball,
prepared for that.
like the
Yeah,
ball.
the ball I played with all summer, so that wasn't an adjustment.
The 3-point line as well.
Well, it's the same in college now. My
Really?
senior year, it was so the 3-point line for college now got switched my senior year, and it's the same. That's the international line now, so that actually wasn't a difference. So it was pretty minimal, I'd say. It's just learning, anytime you're on a new team, you learn new players, you have a new coach. I mean, the time difference was an adjustment at first. I felt really tired for the first couple of weeks, but then you adjust to that as you do to anything, and you're kind of good to go. So it's not a huge adjustment, I'd say. People kind of overestimate how much of an adjustment the play style will be.
I actually
Just, yeah.
played overseas, like when I was in my junior year and senior year. I went to Greece to play for like a week and a half or 2 weeks with like this Greek organization, and we played against like all the U19, U18 Greek teams over there, like Panathinaikos, Olympiakos. We played against
Oh God, yeah.
even like Giannis's old team. We played against over there. So what I can like testify to, like we would practice with like the ball before, but it's like so different when you actually get over there at first, because like it starts slipping off your hand. But then by the time we'd play in Sparta and Athens, so then by the time we get to Athens, you're like finally figure it out after the two other scrimmages, and you start making shots. And also like the guys over there are like so like fundamentally sound. Like the game is way more
Yes.
like you know how AAU it's like 1-on-1 mainly, and you're trying to like go get a bucket. These guys over there, they're not gonna like gamble on defense as much. They're gonna like stay grounded. All their moves are like tight and precise. Like that really like spoke to me about how different like European and like overseas basketball is from like American basketball in the United States.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that. I think the way it is now in America, we have a lot of good one-on-one guys who can do ridiculous dribble moves and dunk on everyone and do all sorts of crazy things. And usually, so in Luxembourg, it's two to three Americans per team, and then the rest of the squad is European passport. So you've got your Americans that come in, and you usually have your Americans as playmakers. So these are the guys that are going by people, getting downhill, and then making a play. But like the European guys, I would say, if you get downhill and you kick to a European guy on the wing and it's like a 3-on-2 next one opportunity, they are usually better at that than the Americans are, because they're fundamentally sound and they're used to playing a type of basketball where the guys in Europe aren't always working on how to do a between cross, hesitation, half spin, go by someone. They're working on how to play as a team.
Right.
So it's an interesting mix because you have your Americans who a lot of times are going one-on-one and trying to get buckets. The teams that end up being really good, at least in Luxembourg, which isn't the level isn't as high as say as Spain or Germany, which is where I hope to be at in a couple of years. But the teams that are really good are the teams that have the Americans that can create for themselves, but get the Europeans advantages because once they're at an advantage, they're usually really, really good.
Yeah, most definitely. So I asked all my guests that come on the show this final question. So, what are your future aspirations for your career going forward?
Yeah, so when people ask about my career, I say there's my basketball career, which will end sooner than my like post basketball career, obviously. In terms of basketball, so my end goal is I want to play in Spain. That's like my, I wouldn't say pipe dream, but my dream, like everything would have to go perfect. Everything goes perfect. I play in the top division of Spain. That's like my maybe attainable if I do everything perfectly for the next 3 to 4 years. Like perfect, perfect. Everything goes exactly how I want it. Like that's, I don't have the athleticism to go to the NBA slash side. I know that. I'd love to. I like to work out. I worked out with some NBA guys. And on my best day, I can score a bucket or two when we're playing ones or twos. But I just don't think I have that level of natural athleticism. And I think I worked really hard to be where I am, but those guys are freaks. And it's sometimes it's just not possible. But so yeah, my realistic but lofty goal would be to play in top division Spain. I'm thinking I will be wrapping up around 30. If barring me meeting the absolute love of my life and falling head over heels in love with someone and deciding to stay, which I can't see happening, or having a really, really bad injury and having to hang them up early, I think around 30, I'll say, okay, that's probably the end of the line, unless I'm in an unbelievable situation and something changes where I like have a wife slash girlfriend, and she's living in Europe with me, and it's all set up for me perfectly. But it's really, really hard to get there. And in terms of career, outside of basketball, I studied psychology on top of Spanish at Hobart. And I would love to go back to school and then go into social work counseling. I'd like to work with adolescents like 20 and under. I've already described it a little bit, but I had a really rough time at that stage in my life.
Yep.
So I would love to go back and help, people who I think were in the same position as me kind of get through there because I didn't really feel confident in myself till I was about 20, 21. Like I just lacked confidence a lot. And like I'm super extroverted now. I ramble on, as you've seen, but I wouldn't
You're good.
speak to people unless spoken to until I was about 19, 20. And that's a tough way to live, just feeling kind of cornered and trapped in yourself. So I'd love to help kids progress through that. That would be like a dream job for me.
Yeah, totally. Well, Jackson, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope everything works out for you going forward with your career and your career off the floor as well.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on the show. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.